Well, do you often wonder how our ancestors could have universally engaged in conduct now considered unconscionable, such as slavery or the treatment of Aboriginal people after British settlement? Yes, retrospective judgment tends to make us feel superior to past generations, doesn't it? In fact, it should really evoke humility. Surely some contemporary practices will be deemed equally detestable by succeeding generations. Which ones do you think? Well, for Charles Krauthammer, the legendary American conservative columnist who died a year ago this week, he believed it will be our treatment of animals. Our great-grandchildren, this was Krauthammer's belief, they will find it difficult to believe that we actually raised, herded, and slaughtered animals on an industrial scale for what? For the eating. Well, a newly elected member of the New South Wales Upper House agrees. She represents the Animal Justice Party. She's been a vegan for about 2 decades. She's won 3 bodybuilding competitions. She's only in her mid-30s. She's our next guest. Emma Hurst, welcome to Between the Lines.
Thank you very much.
Charles Krauthammer, pretty stirring words, weren't they?
Absolutely. And, you know, I think this is really an idea that, you know, that's time has come. We're just seeing a massive growth in this movement and more people are resonating with those words.
Yeah, Krauthammer, in his column in the Washington Post, which was nationally syndicated, he said, "One measure of human moral progress, amid and despite the savageries we visit upon each other, is how we treat the innocent in our care, and none are more innocent than these beautiful animals."
Absolutely.
Now, people usually base their votes on issues like jobs, health, education, the economy. Why did people abandon their usual concerns to vote for a single issue party like yours?
Look, I think that, you know, the Animal Justice Party doesn't really consider animal protection a single issue. You know, when you look at single issue parties like the Voluntary Euthanasia Party, you know, that's one bill, one issue that will create an enormous change if that bill passes. However, the issue of animal protection is actually much broader. When you think about native wildlife, when we think about species extinction, when we think about deforestation, factory farming, human health associated with the use of antibiotics in factory farming, the issues are actually really broad-reaching. And there's so much that needs to be done. And I think the Australian public are seeing that our government is actually failing to protect animals in this country. We're seeing expose after expose of animal cruelty. We're seeing the RSPCA in various states around Australia saying that animal cruelty cases are increasing. And people are disgusted by animal cruelty. You know, people want to see change. And it's just reaching a real tipping point.
Okay, so you've come to Parliament and you seek legislative change. Let's go through some of those issues. You want to change dairy farming to plant-based farming.
Look, you know, the dairy farming industry is in crisis. Now, I'm also a psychologist, so I come from a psychological background. And we've got a real problem in the dairy industry. The first of all, we've got welfare problems. So, you know, bobby calves are taken from their mothers and sent to slaughter, the male bobby calves. We've got mother cows that are being overmilked with mastitis, with lameness. So there's a lot of animal cruelty concerns within the dairy industry. We've also got a consumer shift where people are switching more and more to plant-based milks for ethical reasons, for health reasons. And then we've got another problem on top of that, where we've got dairy farmers themselves explaining that they're suffering from depression, from anxiety, suicide even, reaching higher in rates in amongst farmers. They're not getting enough money for their milk. They're struggling financially. Now, how does somebody with a, you know, that's struggling mentally, that is struggling financially, care for these animals as well?
You're essentially representing the decline of their industry. Why would they cooperate?
Because I think that we need to look at where consumers are moving. So where are people changing their buying power. That's something that, you know, we need to look at. And it's a difficult conversation to have with anybody. But we need to be having these hard conversations. We can't sit back and watch an industry collapse and say, well, you know, it'll just happen. I think it's actually government's role to sit down with the industry and to actually say, look, let's start to work towards a supportive transition program to help these farmers to switch to sustainable industries, to industries that we can foresee are growing amongst consumers. You know, whatever sort of plant-based products that people are buying, Australia has the fourth fastest growing vegan market in the whole world. So we're seeing a huge consumer shift, and we're seeing a lot of people project that that's going to keep increasing, plant-based agriculture.
What about the production, phasing out the production of eggs in this country? People buy more and more free range. Isn't that enough?
Look, I think that on the egg industry, we do need to start with the battery cage industry. The majority of eggs that are being farmed right now in Australia are still in battery cages. And that's because a lot of battery caged eggs are going inside products, which consumers don't realise they're even buying caged eggs. So if you go and buy, you know, a pie, for example, and you might say, I don't buy caged eggs, but you've gone and bought a pie and you've bought a caged egg in that pie. So most caged eggs are finding their way into mayonnaises, cakes, pastries, all these other products, so people don't realise they're still supporting that caged egg industry.
Okay, now we at RN have many listeners in regional Australia, and they represent companies and industries that rely on livestock. And I can imagine many of them hearing this would say that they rely on these industries to support their families. How can you work with them when the stakes are so high for the average worker?
Look, the Animal Justice Party always has this really strong open door policy, and you'd be surprised at how many times we've actually sat down and worked with people within industries. And that goes, you know, within the wool industry in regards to mulesing. We've also have spoken with dairy farmers. We've spoken with egg farmers. We've spoken with industries that use animals in entertainment. And that's because we know that, you know, we have to involve people. It has to be a collaborative process to try to make change.
Yeah, we've been here before. I mean, you may recall, I think it was around 2011, 2012, Prime Minister Julia Gillard, she imposed a sudden ban on the live cattle trade to Indonesia. This was in response to a Four Corners expose.
We understood when we took this decision that it was going to have an impact on the industry, but we needed to make the right decisions here. So we're going to go through this process of suspending now so we can get assurance about where Australian cattle end up and how they are ultimately treated. I understood that it was going to impact on industry.
That was Prime Minister Gillard a few years ago. Now, she didn't bother consulting Jakarta in advance and thus threatened food security for a substantial section of the Indonesian population.
Look, I mean, I find it quite distressing, you know, re-listening to that as well, just because we've seen failure after failure after failure of the live animal export industry even since that action. And it's still going, and the current government is pushing to increase it. And this is a point of real stress and concern for the majority of Australians. They want to see this industry ended.
What about those protests? I mean, do they help or hinder the cause? I think of those 150 or so animal rights activists who sat in the main streets of Melbourne holding slogans to promote veganism. There have been more extreme forms of animal protests like farm invasions. Does that help or hinder the cause, Emma?
Look, we very strongly support the right to peaceful protest. And we've seen peaceful protests, you know, often create community divide. I mean, that's the reason for a protest. And it's interesting that that particular protest got so much attention. I think there was a union protest that blocked the streets of Melbourne a week later, which maybe got a couple of very small newspapers' attention. So, you know, it's very interesting that this particular protest gathered so much attention.
I think Michael McCorback, the Deputy Prime Minister, said that they should get a job.
Well, I can guarantee you that most of those people probably took a day off from their jobs. The amount of times that I've been told to get a job, I can't count it. And yet...
Well, you've got a job for the next 8 years, correct?
Absolutely. But I'll probably still get told to get a job.
You're listening to Between the Lines with me, Tom Switzer. I'm speaking with Emma Hurst from the Animal Justice Party. She's the newly elected member of the New South Wales Upper House. Emma, 12% of all Australians describe themselves as vegetarians. Their aims and habits are pretty clear. What do vegans believe in?
So veganism is an entire lifestyle. So you've sort of got plant-based vegans, which are diet-based, and some people may identify as plant-based for health reasons. So eating a fully plant-based diet can reduce cholesterol, can reduce saturated fat, can reduce the risk of various diseases. There are people that do it for environmental reasons. A vegan diet has significantly less emissions, significantly less water usage, but a lot of people now are doing it for ethical reasons, and that's where veganism and that umbrella sort of falls into. And a vegan identifies as their whole life as moving away and making as little harm as possible. So that also means what we wear as well.
Crude question perhaps, but some of our listeners might be listening to this and say, oh, geez, isn't veganism for rich people?
It's an interesting thing when you actually look at other countries around the world. You know, these plant-based diets are, you know, the more common diet, and in Thailand and in India, it's the meat-eating diets, which are the expensive sort of wealthier diets. Here in Australia, you know, look, I mean, you could go all out and buy all these, you know, expensive spirulina and supplements and all this sort of jazz, but it's completely unnecessary. If you eat a whole food plant-based diet, it's actually cheaper.
Now, do you have to be a vegan to join the Animal Justice Party?
No, absolutely not. Our candidates are vegan if they're running for parliament, but our
members... Do they have to be?
Yes. So we do ask that our candidates are vegan, simply because if somebody's then elected on an animal justice platform, you know, we have to sort of walk the talk, essentially.
Yeah. Now, how's veganism perceived by other politicians, say, on both left and right?
It's actually really interesting. I thought that there would be a significant pushback when I got into the upper house, but there's actually sort of been this bizarre level of interest, even actually probably more so amongst our sort of right-wing conservative politicians, particularly on the first day when we were all being sworn in, and they brought out all this sort of vegan food, and people just started glaring at me and saying, why is your food better than ours? People were getting prawn toast, and we had freshly made hummus and vegetable lasagna. And
that might make it easier to negotiate with the Nats.
Oh, I think so. I think they've been eyeing out my food quite regularly.
Now, there is a growing interest in animal welfare on the right. How do you explain that?
I don't think that animal cruelty is a left or right issue. I think that the majority of Australians want to see changes. In fact, there was actually a study recently by the Federal Parliament of Australia within the Department of Agriculture that found that 95% of Australians have concerns about animal welfare in the farming industry, and 9 out of 10 want to see reform in the farming industry. So that means that this is a mainstream concern.
And yet you've received death threats.
I think that we're receiving death threats from people who are very nervous about change. And, you know, not that I would ever sort of poo-poo those death threats. I think it's very serious. But I think that there's always going to be resistance to change.
Are there any companies or industries you're working with to improve the conditions for animals?
We are working across the board. So at the moment, we've actually just got up an inquiry into the battery caged egg industry within New South Wales. So we've just opened up for submissions, and that's open to submissions from all members of the public. And it's also open to submissions from animal welfare, animal rights organisations, and of course from industry. So we want to hear from everyone on that.
What about dolphin welfare? I think of SeaWorld. I've taken my daughters to SeaWorld a few times and they enjoyed immensely. But this has got to be a big issue for the Animal Justice Party.
Absolutely. This is a massive focus of mine as well. Look, when I was a child, I asked to go to SeaWorld as well. I love dolphins. But if I had known then what I know now, I wouldn't have asked to go as a child. What I realise now is that you can't ever really meet the needs of an animal in captivity, particularly an animal that's as intelligent as a dolphin, where we're taking them out of an ocean environment and putting them in a backyard chlorinated pool. And the biggest issue is that 52% of bottlenose dolphins that are bred in captivity don't live past 1 year. And the ones that do live for over 50 years. And so that means that the dolphins that I watched when I was a child are still doing the same ridiculous tricks day in, day out for 12-hour shifts without breaks.
There's surely been some progress over the last 20, 30 years.
In New South Wales, there has been progress. So various animal welfare groups have been working with the one facility that's in New South Wales, which is now called Dolphin Marine Conservation Park, and they have voluntarily agreed to put up a policy not to breed their dolphins anymore so that the dolphins that they have will be the last of their generation in New South Wales. They're also open, and what we're trying to work with the New South Wales government on is building a sea pen to actually retire these dolphins into a sea sanctuary. They can't be released because they're captive bred. They don't know how to survive in the wild. One of these dolphins only 9 years old, so he's probably got another 40 years left where he can live, you know, in a cove essentially around Coffs Harbour. And tourists can come and sit on the rocks and actually watch a pod of dolphins called semi-wild, essentially, which will be a beautiful thing to have in Coffs Harbour.
My guest is Emma Hurst, and she's from the Animal Justice Party. Emma, let's put this broadly in a global context. Are there any overseas examples of successful animal welfare policy?
Absolutely. All around the world, we're seeing bans on the use of animals for circuses. Just recently, we saw in Canada a ban on the captivity of whales and dolphins. So I think that we've got a really good chance of getting the same thing happening here in New South Wales.
I think Netherlands has a party for animal justice too, correct?
Absolutely. They were actually the first party for animals all around the world. And now we've got about 11 in the EU. And there's another one, or I think there might be two in the US. And so this is a growing movement worldwide to actually bring animals into politics.
And what else would you like to see established to have a global approach to animal welfare? I mean, is that even possible?
Look, I think that it will get that way. I think that, you know, when we start to, you know, build these parties, I think we need to continue to work together. We need to work united. And look, I think that when something happens in another country like Canada, you know, that helps to create a precedence for what can happen, you know, in Australia. And there are organisations like World Animal Protection, for example, who are working internationally. You know, if we get a ban on the breeding, for example, of dolphins and whales for captivity, for entertainment, as does Canada, then these international groups can actually work with other countries to say, look, it's happened, it's worked, this is how they did it.
Okay, Emma, now back to Charles Krauthammer. Now, he said in that column in the Washington Post, meat eating's extinction will ultimately come, and it will be market driven as well. Science will find dietary substitutes that can be produced at infinitely less cost and effort.
Absolutely. And this is something that gets me really, really excited because it's something that I can see happening. In fact, in California, they've actually got a conference on this very topic. And you're right, once they're cheaper and healthier, it would be bizarre to say, no, I want an animal killed just for the sake of killing an animal. People are going to switch their diets. And I think it's a huge shift that we're going to see within my lifetime. And I think, you know, in one or two generations, we could even see an extinction of people consuming animals.
Emma, great to have you on RN today.
Thank you.
Emma Hurst is from the Animal Justice Party. She's the newly elected member of the New South Wales Upper House.